What I'll do is I'll just interview you, and then I'll make a tape of what I have. I can give you a copy if you want it for your personal records, and then I'll send a copy into Sabre, mm-hmm. and it'll go to the Hall of Fame, and it'll be there for researchers and people to talk to. So just for the record, my name is Paul Matica. I'm a member of the Sabre Oral History Committee, and I'm here today. It's April 17, 2002. I'm here with Sean Smith, who's the general manager of the Lowell Spinners of the New York Penn short season A-ball team. They're the affiliate of the Boston Red Sox, and we're here in his office at Ed LaLacher Park in Lowell, Massachusetts. And we have to take care of our legal obligations here, so I have a disclaimer for you to acknowledge. We will be sending a copy of this tape to the Hall of Fame, but Sabre reserves the right to distribute the tape or transcriptions of the interview, other research, and post it on the internet for others to hear. Is this okay with you?
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Maybe we could just start with some of your background, you know, where you're born and your baseball interests as a youth and that sort of thing.
Okay. So. I was born in Endicott, New York, but I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I played ball ever since I was a little guy, since I was, you know, 4 1/2 years old. Played ball through high school. We won the state championship in North Carolina my senior year of high school. I respectfully sat the bench at Purdue University, and then when I graduated from Purdue, I went to get my master's at Syracuse University, and I played on the club baseball team there. Syracuse actually disbanded baseball in 1973. So the year that I played, we had 25 games and were snowed out of 21 of them.
That sounds like Syracuse.
Yeah. And then I got involved in baseball at this level.
Were you what position did you play?
I did everything but pitch and catch.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I played everywhere.
All around. You prototypical utility guy, huh?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. How did you arrive at your decision to get into baseball as a career, and how did that evolve?
Actually, I got lucky. When I was a grad student at Syracuse University, I was hired to work in the sports information department for Larry Kimball, who was then the SID and had been there for 30-some-odd years and was like the dean of sports information directors in the country. Mm-hmm. Worked there for a couple years, and Larry knew someone in the Astros organization in Auburn, New York, the old Auburn Astros, which are now the Auburn Doubledays. Mm-hmm. I got an interview, eventually got hired, basically from Larry Kimball's recommendation. And worked my way up to assistant GM and then GM, and basically mm-hmm. I got lucky. Mm-hmm. Got lucky.
Did you do anything with the Syracuse Chiefs in the International League?
No, but it wasn't for a lack of trying. Uh-huh. I was a season ticket holder there, and did everything I could to try to offer my assistance free of charge, and uh-huh. They just weren't interested.
Okay, I imagine some of these jobs are tough to come by. Okay, so how long were you in Auburn?
I was general manager there in 1994 and 1995. Mm-hmm. I then went to, and I opened a new stadium there in 95. I was then asked to go to Batavia, New York, and I signed a 3-year contract to be the general manager of the Batavia Clippers, which are now the Batavia Muck Dogs, Philadelphia Phillies affiliate.
Right.
Opened a new park there in 96, and while I was there, I was offered to come here to Lowell, and they offered to buy out my contract in Batavia and come here to work with the Red Sox, open this new facility, and be here.
Okay. Yeah, my brother lives in Batavia.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so he goes to the Muck Dog games.
I love Batavia. Love it. Absolutely love it. Great town. That's where I met my wife.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Great town.
She's a native of
Batavia? Yeah, she's from Batavia. Yeah. So okay. I'm sure your brother knows Pontello's restaurant very well.
I'm sure he does. He was in the state police.
I love it. Great town. Great town.
Quite a bit different from Lowell. Oh. It's very small.
I think there's about 12,000 people in Batavia.
Right, yeah. And I asked him what kind of crowd they get there, and he said, geez, you know, under 1,000 and all that. And I said, geez, how do they compete? Because Lowell is, you guys are doing so fantastic.
Yeah, in Batavia, you know, we certainly worked as hard as we could.
Have the same base to draw from.
Exactly. The population is a lot different.
Yeah, and you're sort of in between Buffalo and Rochester, so you have competing
AAA
teams there. Could you describe your duties here, during the off season as well as during the season?
Mainly my focus is to assemble a good staff, put together people that can work independently as well as work well with others.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in hiring good people and letting them do their jobs. I'm not a micromanager, though there's sometimes I should be and I'm not. Other times I think people probably wish I was a little more hands-on. We've got people here in the middle 50s down to the middle 20s, and
mm-hmm.
I believe in hiring good people. As I said, let them bring who they are to the organization and
mm-hmm.
not let them influence
mm-hmm.
Not let me influence my ways. Because if we did everything my way all the time, we wouldn't be successful.
Yeah.
So my main job is to corral everybody, keep them on focus, keep them on track. I oversee the whole operation, everything from grounds and maintenance to advertising sales, ticket sales, souvenir merchandise sales, program sales, concession sales, ticket sales, anything that goes on here, whether it's spinner games or other extracurricular events. So we oversee the whole operation, maintain the whole facility.
Oh, for the UMass baseball
yeah,
team?
This facility is also home to UMass
yeah.
Little Baseball
right.
in the spring and fall.
Okay. How many full-time employees are there?
There's 13 here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I guess during the baseball season, then those go up.
Right. Yeah. We hire about 160 other individuals for part-time work during the season.
Primarily college kids?
College, high school. And we have, I'd say, probably 20 adults on staff.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest are college and high school kids.
Uh-huh.
We get a lot of great kids here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Coming
to a number of the games here, yeah, they all seem like great people,
yeah.
and everybody loves their job.
Yep,
and
yep.
Really enthused
everybody
about it.
Everybody smiles,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
So what is a typical, you know, game day like, you know, what?
Well, it really depends on the weather conditions.
Uh-huh.
Basically, you know, we get here, we arrive a little later. When I was early in my career, I would work typically from 6 or 7 in the morning until 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
Thank God those days are gone.
I don't see the bed in your
no.
room, Billy.
on a game day, we work from basically 10 in the morning until, you know, midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And a basic game day, everyone comes in, gets their own system set up, everything operational for that night, whether it's concessions or tickets or promotions
uh-huh.
or what have you. I make sure the team's taken care of. If there's any issues that day with the Red Sox, any player moves, you know, always checking the weather pattern to make sure that's fine, making sure the umpires are here, making sure the security companies the police officers are lined up for that night,
yeah.
that our staff needs are taken care of and addressed. And then I can kind of sit back and let them work
uh-huh.
and kind of be the guy to help out with any other issues that might
sure.
come about if they're shorthanded.
Uh-huh.
Once we approach game time, everyone really gets in game mode. Usually during the season on home games, there's very little communication amongst us. Everyone is always walking. We're busy bees, and they're walking away from each
mm-hmm.
other and towards each other, and it's just zigzagging everywhere.
Yeah.
We do most of our communicating in short sentences or through body language. You know, it's just something where we get so focused
mm-hmm.
and go. Pre-game, it's important for me to make sure that the police have showed up, that there's no parking problems outside. Everything's going well at the front gate with whatever giveaway we have or whatever
mm.
issues are going out the front gate.
Yeah.
Make sure there's no scalping going on out in front of the ballpark.
Uh-huh.
Making sure that the kids' area people are set up and going well, and taking care of the pregame ceremonies, making sure all the people are here for the pregame ceremonies, making sure our staff is overseeing that properly, and most importantly, making sure the game goes off on time.
Uh-huh.
And then during the game, I watch the ball game, talk to my staff, mainly talk to fans, talk
uh-huh.
to the media, and kind of hang out.
Ah.
It's really enjoyable. Everyone else is working their tail off,
sure.
and our owners and I.
Rank has its privileges, right?
Yeah, yeah. But no, when there's problems
yeah.
that come about,
oh yeah, sure.
Make
yeah.
sure I'm right there. We make
yeah.
sure we're very proactive on the issues.
Uh-huh.
And typically in the seventh, eighth, ninth innings, I'm in the back of the dugout watching the last
uh-huh.
few innings of the game.
Okay,
uh-huh. I hide back in the corner.
How does the, you don't have any say in the players and that sort of thing?
No,
you?
Not at all. The Boston Red Sox are responsible for all the players, all the paying of the salaries, all the insurances. I work not for the Red Sox, but with the Red Sox. What they
right.
tell me to do, I essentially do it even though they don't sign my
okay.
paycheck.
Okay, and that goes, that's true of the manager and the coaches as well?
Manager and the coaches, they're all employed by the Red Sox.
Okay.
So we work with these guys to give them the best tools and best opportunities to do their jobs and to be as successful as possible.
Okay. And you arrange the transportation for the players and all that?
Actually, it's funny you mention that.
Yeah.
For the past 10 years of my career, I've always had to do that. Things have changed with the our current relationship with the Red Sox, and for the first time in my career, I no longer have to handle the travel.
So
that's exciting, you know. But it, I'll have to admit, it was a lot of fun, you know, making phone calls at midnight to travel
agents.
Oh,
I'm sure. Yeah, you're
trying
into
to
some
make
crazy
those arrangements,
things, yeah.
And it was fun. But I guess those days are over now.
Why was that done? I was just curious.
It was all, we had a local travel agent we dealt with. We were the only team in the organization that dealt with a local travel agent. The Red Sox want to be able to keep all their business together with their own travel agent.
Oh, okay. So they probably get economies of scale or
something. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. So you've done fantastically well here, having stood in line for the past 3 years on opening day, trying to buy tickets. Each year it's gotten worse. I know you've tried to do a better job of it, but your success is, you've been too successful.
It's insane. It is insane.
3 years ago I came at 8:30 and you were going to start selling at 9 o'clock. Yeah. I left at 12:30.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I came at 7:30 and I left at, I think, 11:30 or 12. And this year I came at 7:15 and I left at 1:15.
Yeah.
And
it's absolutely amazing. What we need to do to take care of our fans better with ticket sales is we have to purchase a new ticket system so we can go live in real time on the internet instead of it being an order taking process. There was a big article in the paper today about the overwhelming response we've had. I was here last night with my staff till 9:30 trying to get these tickets.
I checked your website today, and he said it's down.
But actually tonight it's going to be put back up. We're finally caught up. We've been running ads in the paper thanking our fans, and now the website's going to be back up and going tonight, which is good.
Yeah.
Which is
what
good.
Do you? I know it, the your success is due to a lot of things. You know, I'm sure your hard work and
great community. That's the main thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're here to serve the community, and we're lucky, quite frankly. And I guess I never really realized, I mean, I thank God every day that I work in baseball. I honestly thank him every day for working in baseball. And it every once in a while it really hits you what you do, because when you're so close to a job that other people might think is neat or bad or what have you, you don't really realize what you're doing until something causes you to step outside of that box. And whether good or bad. And this whole ticket dilemma, for a good and bad reason, has had me step out of the box and look at our operation to make improvements and also to look at how to handle some of the success. And the other night, I was talking to a customer on the phone, and I said to him, I'm actually feeling lucky that I'm able to come in and see these games because no one else gets to come in and see them. And it just really makes us realize how fortunate we are to be a part of this whole enigma that is baseball.
Yeah. You got to walk a fine line because you don't want to offend any of these people. You still want to keep them as customers
right.
You know, if they come here and they get disappointed, they could just get
turned
off by the whole the whole experience.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So, do you have any contact with the players after they leave here? Or
There's a handful of guys that I've actually kept in touch with over the years, and. Some of them have gone on to the big leagues, and some of them haven't. Some of my favorite players that I look back on my career are guys that really never made it out of A-ball. Then there's some of my favorite players as people that have gone on to be very, very successful. David Eckstein, who's a shortstop for the Eagles.
Oh, yeah, he was one of my favorites. I saw him, and I said, geez, he's going to be a major leaguer, you know?
Eck is a great kid.
Yeah.
Great kid.
And yeah, I mean, he was a walk-on at the University of Florida, he's basically a very low draft choice for the Red Sox.
Well,
you know,
what was it? I think
18 or something.
And Dave and I've just kept in touch over the years. And when he made it to Pawtucket, my wife and I went down and went to dinner with him. You're just a good guy.
Yeah.
I talk to his parents once or twice a year, and now that he's made it up, you know, now Dave and I, we exchange cell phone numbers and call each other, maybe once every 2 months or something.
Sure.
But it's neat. That's special.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I look back on the players that. That when they were here made an impact on me because I felt I had a personal relationship with their sufferings, if you will, at this time.
Yeah.
A guy named Dion Rucker that we had in 1997. A guy named Clark Caudill that we had in the year 2000. Guys that loved the game and they were good, solid people, and to just see them struggle.
Yeah, well, that's a big transition for
them. They were good guys, great college players, and to see them have that difficulty.
Yeah.
Seeing them at the end of the road where I was when I was much younger and not as talented, believe
sure,
me.
Sure.
And to see it through a different perspective,
yeah,
it makes me feel mm-hmm. makes me feel normal, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure what this is about.
Okay, we're gonna stop.
For us to have our fireworks nights.
Yeah, I'm sure those are some of your biggest attractions. Yeah.
Fireworks nights are great.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry about that.
No, not a problem. Jeez, that's business is business.
See, a major league general manager's cell phone would go off in the middle of an interview and it'd be about a player move. Mine goes off and it's about fireworks night.
Right. That says a lot. You're right. Let's see. What is your, do you have any biggest thrill to date? Let me just address here. I looked at your biography and you won all these awards here. Baseball America's Freitas Award and Minor League Baseball's McPhail Promotional Award for 2001.
The McPhail Trophy was a big thrill.
That was for
overall excellence and in an operation and promotional involvement and marketing and things like that.
Uh-huh.
We were the first short season team to ever win it in the 30 some odd year history of the organization of the award.
Yeah,
that was a big thrill to get that. I mean, big thrills. I don't know. I mean, opening this facility was neat.
Did you have any role in the design of the stadium or anything like that?
All the city people and everything. Uh-huh. I mean, I think I look at it, Paul. There's a variety of thrills. This is going to sound hokey, but seeing kids happy with their parents. I mean that's a daily thrill. You see the park, and that reminds you what it's all about. When Brett Saberhagen pitched for us in 97, it was a big thrill, not because it was Brett Saberhagen, because of the media attention, and it really put our organization on the map. So it was a big thrill to experience that.
That's one of the neatest things about baseball, is where you come to an A-ball team and you see somebody like Brett Saberhagen, you know?
But is overall, you know, like to say this is the best thing of my career, I still think that stuff's on the horizon. I look at it every day that I think the best part of my career, the biggest thrill is that I work in baseball. I'm married to the woman I love, and you know, there's always tomorrow. You know, and there's nothing that I really ever want to hang my hat on. I'm hoping that'll always be in front of me.
Yeah, where do your I'm just interested in your career aspirations.
Very easy question to answer. My career aspirations are to take care of my wife and one day family, to work for great owners, and to work in a great community. Mm-hmm. Those are my career aspirations. And thank God I've been able to help take care of my wife. I've got great owners, in my opinion, the best owners in the world. Yeah. And I've got a great, great community. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if I have the opportunity to work in Major League Baseball. If it's not the right situation for me and my family, that's obviously not the right decision to make. A lot of people want to go, you know, to Double A, Triple A, Major Leagues, this, that, and the other thing. Whatever I'm meant to do, I believe I will do.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've been able to achieve some pretty neat things in a short period of time. I used to let that identify who I was. I used to let my goals identify who I was. And the day that I met the woman I love, all that changed.
Huh. Really? Wow. That's very good, very interesting perspective. I was just reading in this issue of Die Hard about Mike Tamburo, who's been down at Pawtucket since 1974,
I think,
and he's happy down there, and they run a great,
unbelievable job,
great operation, and
Mike's great.
I interviewed Rick Lancelotti. Remember him? He played.
Know the name? Yeah.
Okay, he was a career minor leaguer and all that sort of thing, and he happens to live in Buffalo, and I was there on vacation.
Yeah.
I'm from Buffalo originally, and I interviewed him, and I mentioned Ben Mondo and all that, and God, he couldn't say enough about him. You know, he says that was really a thrill for him to be there, and really, you know, it was really a great environment for the players as well as.
Did he ever make the big leagues at all?
Yeah, very limited amount of time. I think I saw the last at bat at Fenway. He was with San Diego for a while, just a cup of coffee type of thing. And
that's good though, he made it.
Yeah. So he runs a baseball school now in Buffalo.
Whereabouts in Buffalo?
In Cheektowaga.
Okay, I know right where that is.
Yeah, right near the Walden Avenue, right near where the Galleria Mall is, just down the road from...
My mother-in-law lives in West Seneca.
Okay, my brother lives there.
Oh, yeah?
My sister, too.
Yeah? Oh, wow. My wife and I got married at 14 Holy Helpers Church.
Oh, God, that's where my brother goes to. Yeah? That's his parish, yeah.
That's where we got married, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a good bar there.
The Deerhead?
Well, it's not... What the heck? It's called Metzger's Pub.
Okay.
And it's Ebenezer, New York.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like across the street. Right. I don't even know what the heck Ebenezer is.
Yeah.
But it's, if you know where the West Seneca Shopping Plaza is?
Right.
It's down the street from that. I mean, it's not on the same street. It's across the street, down the road.
Okay.
There's another Catholic church just right down the road from it there.
Okay.
And every time we're in Buffalo, we always go to Metzger's Pub.
Okay. Got to have your beef on weck and that sort of thing. And, Okay. Let's see. Let me run through my list of questions here. Do you have any advice for, you know, maybe young people who would be interested in pursuing a career such as yours, and you know how they might go about doing it? And
I would say, looking at it in two ways: experience and education. I did not go to school for sports management. I think there are so many schools today that have sports management schools that might try to persuade you in those directions, and saying that that's going to lead you to a career. But I think a career in sports, especially in baseball, is based on two things: luck and timing. And both of those things are a product of who you know. Educationally speaking, business courses, management courses, communication courses, good common sense understanding of business,
mm-hmm.
and in dealing with people. As far as experience goes, you can never get too much experience. If you're a college student, I don't care if you're a freshman or a senior, there's ways to get involved in your community and get your foot in the door. The worst thing is when you go for a job interview and have no experience. That's your own fault. You need to create your own experience, whether it's helping out at a local high school and helping out the athletic director, mm-hmm. or helping out at your college's intramural program or athletic department or sports information department or local minor league team.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you can do to get the experience. So when you go into a job interview, you can say, hey, I may only be 22 years old, but these are the things I've done in my 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think good common sense work experiences, I worked at a drugstore in high school and in college when I would come back from school. I worked at Eckerd Drugs. And there's things that I do every day in my job here that make me think back to Eckerd Drugs. It was an invaluable experience for me. I love Eckerd's with all my heart. Every time I go back to Charlotte, I've always got to go into the store I worked at. It was a big, big part of my life. In grad school, I worked as a short order cook in a bar in Syracuse. And I had great experiences there and good common sense business knowledge in dealing with people.
Sure.
And when you're in a sports management program, when you're in school for whatever you're going to study, nothing can prepare you for the real world and what you're about to face. Your professors can tell you till they're blue in the face that you're not going to make any money, you're going to have to clean toilets, you're going to have to do this, you're going to have to do that. But you have to get out there and do it. So many kids come to us for interviews with no experience or little experience to where they think, okay, I went to such and such a school, which is ranked whatever in the sports management mm-hmm. program, therefore I'm going to receive a job that may not necessarily pay me well, but I don't have to do these type of things because I went to this school.
Yeah.
Well, when you come here, you're just like the rest of us.
Right, yeah.
And I'll be the first to be right alongside my employees cleaning toilets. You know, it's a team concept.
Sure.
Not everybody operates that way, but it's a team concept here, which we try the best we can. You know, the hierarchy comes into effect when necessary, but we're all here for our community and for each other.
Yeah, well, I saw Drew passing out donuts and cookies, and
that's the safest place for him.
Oh, I see.
We make sure he does that.
There's a method.
We don't want him getting hurt. That way, Drew can interact with fans, have some fun. And we don't feel like falling down the steps or anything.
He was tossing T-shirts and all that sort of thing, so he's feeling productive.
See, that's dangerous. Then he pulls his arm out, and then he can't. Okay. Then he can't work.
Let's see. I just happen all over the place here. Just in terms of the mechanics, say your promotions and all that,
mm-hmm.
Are there companies that you deal with who handle all the promotions for you, and or do you deal with those because you have so many of them?
Right.
Yeah, those all one-on-one?
We actually sit down as a team, a staff. Uh-huh. There's some things we do are pretty cut and dry, you know, fireworks night, for example.
Sure.
We're doing some crazy promotions this year. We're doing a twins night to celebrate identical twins. We're doing a Harley Davidson
night. I think
we have tickets
for that night.
We're doing a Winter Wonderland, which we're still going to see how that's going to work out. But we try to operate as one collective mind and try to get different experiences or different ideas. And then we go to other people to get their recommendations. Like with Twins Night, we go to local twins groups and ask them about different activities, different things going on.
Oh,
we try
I see.
To do research on how to make these promotions better. If we find out they're not going to be any good, then we bag the idea. The Big Dig, we're doing a Big Dig night this year. We're going to make fun of the whole work project in Boston. We've got some fun things lined up. On Monday, one of my colleagues and I are going down, and we're meeting with two different groups of people from the Big Dig.
Oh, I see.
And we're going to them to politely let them know what we're going to do. You know, we don't want to give them too much of an indication that we're going to make fun of it. But we're hoping we can pick up some creative ideas from them that we could build on or help to make fun of, I guess.
Well, you might get some shovel full of dirt or something like that. Maybe
exactly.
Give that away
exactly.
as a gift or something like that.
Exactly right. Yeah. See, you're on the right track. Fun, silly things like that.
I miss my calling.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
I presume there's also conventions for minor league things and, you know, people who work in minor leagues where you exchange ideas.
There's
and
a couple different seminars. Our league meetings, we hold a couple league meetings each year. Not much gets accomplished by way of exchanging ideas at those meetings, but...
Is that strictly like the New York Penn League?
New York Penn League. And then there's winter meetings where you have all the baseball there.
Okay.
And I am a firm believer that you learn the most at winter meetings outside the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether you drink or not, it's irrelevant. But when you go to the bars, you can have a soda. And you still go to the bars.
Yeah.
You go to the bars with the guys and girls that you work with. That's where you learn. Now, it doesn't have to be at a bar. It could be at a restaurant. It could be on a park bench. But
right.
outside
more of
the meetings,
atmosphere.
That's where you learn. That's where you steal ideas. That's where you help each other. That's where you hone your skills. That's where you make your contacts.
Yeah.
There's also a seminar, and I speak at winter meetings, and I also speak at the Minor League Baseball Promotional Seminar, which used to be in El Paso, Texas, then was in Las Vegas, and now is in Myrtle Beach. And you learn a lot of things there, but a lot of it's stuff you may have already known.
Mm-hmm.
But here again, it's the extracurricular activities where you learn, you network, you exchange ideas, you steal ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you develop that network, you get on the phone, you call somebody during the season or during the off season and say, hey, how can I do this better?
Yeah.
And it works the same thing with employees. You say, hey, I need somebody. Do you have anybody? Well, I got a guy that would be great. And you take somebody at their word. And one of my biggest honors, we've got a friend of mine that runs the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes. His name's Pat Philippon. Two of my former employees worked for Pat. Pat hired them. And of course, he interviewed them and stuff after.
Yeah.
But because I recommended him.
Sure.
When he took the chance on the first kid, I was thrilled.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe it. You know, he actually believed me.
Yeah.
That was a big thrill for me.
Yeah.
And then for him to take the second kid, you know, I've got one of their team's ball caps. I wear the, you know, it's like Spinners West Coast.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's and his attendance numbers are up right now, and our guys are doing really well for him, and it makes me happy.
Oh yeah, that's. I happen to be an engineer, but it's the same thing. It's really a small community when you get down to it. No, word of mouth means everything, and you know but getting the personal recommendations.
Right, right.
And
exactly.
So it's.
Is that Soriano? I keep figuring out who that is.
Oh, is that? It looks like it, but I kind of doubt it. If I can find out.
Oh, that's okay. That's just been catching my eye.
It's
Soriano or not.
Okay, well, I sort of exhausted myself. Did I miss anything? Anything important that you think somebody would be interested in?
I think that I touched on the point of, this could be true for any line of work, about not letting your job create your identity and who you are. That's something that I struggled with when I was younger, because when I was single, that's all I had.
Right.
I've been married for 3.5 years, and I try to, though my wife would seriously debate this, I try to separate my work life and my professional life, and I don't do a very good job at it.
Yeah.
But I know that what counts is the impact you make on those that are important to you. If I were to lose my job in baseball, I'd be devastated, don't get me wrong. I don't know what I would do. But I do know that if that were to happen, that's not all there is in this world. And baseball is a great and wonderful thing to be involved in. It's a great and wonderful thing to play. And there's going to become a time, whether you're an engineer or a baseball general manager, where you have to step away. Hopefully you have to step away on your own terms.
Sure.
And you can go off into the sunset and enjoy your life your way. And that's what I hope. I hope I'm in this game to the day I die. Or to the day they throw me out when I can no longer walk or speak. But when you can walk away knowing you did a good job, that's all you can hope for.
Sure. You know. Sure. Yeah, you're right. That's true of any walk of life and life in general.
I hope one day that we'll be 70 some odd years old and I walk away from the park holding hands with my wife and that's it, you know.
All right, one more question came to mind. Your favorite player is Mickey Rivers.
Now, I was wondering about that. Any chance I get to promote that, I will.
Mick the Quick.
You've got to go to the website.
Oh, okay. I didn't do that.
MickeyRivers.net.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I
okay. Stop again.
The Marquia.
Ah, very good. So when it's got the upper opening.
That's what the plan is. That's what the plan is.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, watched baseball stuff on TV, and Mickey Rivers, I've gotten to know him as a person, so it's a little different as a person. But the way he approaches the game, or approached the game, he laughed, he played hard, he gave his all the time.
Yeah.
He had a little funny attitude to him. He made me smile, made me laugh. Uh-huh. And it always comes back to he is what enabled me to really open my eyes towards baseball and to be happy watching the game and taking part in the game. I've gotten to know him as a person. He's a bit of a screwball.
Yeah, I hear he was into gambling quite a bit.
Yeah. He's not the most reliable person. He's a very nice guy. In fact, I was down in Tampa 2 weeks ago at Yankees camp, and we spent some time together, and we're going to get together to go out to dinner, and I knew he was going to stand me up. Uh-huh. And I gave him a little lecture about how I had a two-hour drive, and I said, don't do this to me. If you're not going to do it, tell me you're not going to do it. No, I'll meet you at 5 o'clock at the hotel. So I get there knowing full ahead of time he's not going to show up. So I gave myself a chance to relax.
Yeah.
As I said, at 6 o'clock I'm leaving, and sure enough, he never showed up. And it's just I don't understand why you have to do it. If you can't do it, just be man enough to tell me, look, I can't do it. But that's Mickey Rivers.
Yeah.
That's part of the legend of Mickey Rivers. He is an interesting individual.
Yeah, I remember seeing him play against
Certainly check out the website.
I will do that. How did you first meet him?
When I started working in baseball, I actually got a chance to meet him and got to spend 3 days with him once. When I was in Auburn, he came up. We went to the Hall of Fame. He did a thing for us for a fundraiser.
Oh, I see.
And had some good times. And I have got the...
He's not affiliated with baseball.
Oh, he does stuff for the Yankees. He's a spring training coach.
Oh, he is.
And then he does fantasy camp. He also does fantasy camp for the Rangers. Uh-huh. But then otherwise he's just footloose and fancy free.
Yeah. Oops.
I'm sorry.
One more time. Okay.
Manchester thing.
Would that be what league would that be?
Eastern League.
A Double A.
Yeah.
Within a new franchise, or
I can't say.
Oh, okay.
Within the next 45 days, we'll know. It'll be if it's going to be done, it'll be done. If it's not, it won't.
It would be starting next year.
2004.
Okay, they have to build a stadium.
Just gave proposals Monday night for the aldermen and had this whole big show.
Uh huh.
So this is a pretty big.
That would be great. Yeah.
It'd be pretty neat because my home is in between and between there. So I'd be 25 minutes from each park.
Yeah. And that would be a natural location for the what is now the Trenton Thunder. And who knows?
We'd be happy if it was the Dodgers,
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That would be
neat. Well, it'd be great for Manchester because they got they just got the hockey team.
Correct.
And they're doing really well there.
That's exactly right.
Wow.
So we're hoping we can build on that.
Wow.
And we're talking about developing the property, putting in a hotel, as well as a ballpark and some sort of convention center or condominiums.
Uh-huh.
So the press is trying to find out what we're doing.
I see.
We told them what we're doing, but they're trying to find out the specifics.
Uh-huh.
And we're not at liberty to say.
Yeah. Okay, well, good luck.
This could be interesting.
Yeah. So you could be commuting south on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
north on Wednesday, Thursdays, and Fridays.
This could be awfully interesting if this happens.
Oh, great.
But if it doesn't, hey, I'm still working at a ballpark.
Sure. That's good. Look, another question came to mind. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of the roster and all that, when is that set? Is that I know because they have the draft and they're signing players, but they also have players down from the previous year who are in the golf league or the rookie league down there, I guess it is.
It really depends on a couple things.
Yeah.
If they sign the players they draft.
Right.
This goes for any organization. If they sign the players they draft, what the injury situation is like in the lower levels of the organization, and also the level of maturity, playing maturity of the talent that's down in the rookie league, in the Gulf Coast League.
Yeah.
So they try to balance, mainly you know, the injury issue isn't really that big of a deal, so they try to balance the other two in determining the ball club. You know, we open June 18th, players will start to arrive June 9th.
We
may not know who our team is. You know, we may have an idea of who it's going to be, but we may not know who it is until 2 days before the game.
Sure.
And it's an interesting way that for me to remember players' names, I'll remember the whole team in 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And when I meet them, I stare them straight in the eyes, and I just say, forgive me here, I got to do this.
Yeah.
I ask for their name, they tell me their name, and I look at them, and I say their name repeatedly out loud, backwards and forwards, forwards and backwards. I tell them to put their hat on, take their hat off, and they look at me like I'm an absolute freak.
But it works.
And then I'm done. Then I know all their names.
I see.
But, I mean, I stare at them, because I glare at them like this, and it just registers in my brain. I look at them, and they're just like, they're looking away from me, and I'm like, no, don't look away. Let me burn your image in my head. And then that's it. And it's there forever.
Yeah, you're looking for some particular facial expression.
But when the guys come in during the season, and they may be here for a short period of time, and if I don't get to do that, no idea who they are.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, see some guy walk through the office, and you're like, oh, that's Carlos Brackley. And, you know.
Uh-huh.
You just know it's him because it's a player.
Sure.
And he's the one you haven't met.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You know, so it's a process of elimination.
Okay, I think that's it. So thanks very much. I appreciate you taking your time. I know things are going to start getting hectic. And
we have our national anthem. We have our national anthem contest tonight.
Oh, I see.
For the past 2 years, we had it outdoors, and it was like 20 degrees.
Uh-huh.
So this year we scheduled indoors, and it's, what, 90 today.
Oh, okay. So you're local people here try volunteer
out.
And
try to try out for it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting.
I'm sure. Yeah.
I've done research down at the Baseball Hall of Fame. I was actually starting a book on Mickey Rivers, and the title of it is "Ain't No Sense Worrying."
Uh-huh.
And put together.
That was his favorite expression.
It was part of his. I put together a conglomeration of stories that were, you know, more anecdotal. However, I found out more thoroughly in the past year that a lot of the stories are half-truths and inaccurate.
Oh, I see.
So it would, you know, you think it would be a non-fiction work, but after you're finding out, it'd be like a collection of fictional short stories.
You can't say
He would tell me certain parts of certain things, and I would check backwards and find out it wasn't true. I heard a remarkable story about he and Payne Stewart. And then when I got a chance to meet and talk with Mickey last May in Texas, I found out in his back end it was the stories were a day apart from each other. Yes, they were together, but it wasn't as the story was translated to me. The way it was translated to me is they were doing a function together. Payne stayed a little bit longer to sign autographs and stuff for kids, and Mickey took him to the airport. And Payne was rushing to get in his plane, which was the plane that ended up crashing, and left one of his bags in Mickey's trunk. So Mickey had some clothes and stuff like that were Payne Stewart's, but he didn't know what to do with it and was driving around with him in these trunks and giving away his golf balls and tees to friends of his that played golf, which is, you know, kind of weird.
Yeah.
And but I found out the truth was they were together, but it was the day before.
I see.
And Payne Stewart left some stuff for Mickey to use for his foundation. He's got a thing where he works with kids. How legitimate it is, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's legitimate at all.
Yeah.
And that Mickey had this extra stuff that Payne had given him, some golf shirts and stuff that he'd signed, some balls and tees and things. So it was, you know, kind of partially true.
Uh-huh.
And then when Al Gore was visiting in Florida running for the presidential race, Mickey was on a radio interview, and he's very difficult to understand, telling people how he knows Al Gore. And no one believed him. And Al Gore's up on stage, and there's Mickey Rivers in the background on the stage. And you're just like, you know, no one ever believes really what he's saying.
Yeah, yeah.
And just when you're like, there's no way this is true, then that's true. You're like, what is going on?
He sure wasn't done with computers.
He's
Yeah.
He's like chasing an alley cat, I'll tell you. He's something else. He's something else.
Yeah.
I'm pretty good friends with his ex-wife, his second ex-wife. And I have the most, not the most valuable, but the most complete collection of Mickey Rivers memorabilia on the face of the planet.
I see.
Not the most valuable, because I don't have any of these World Series rings. One of those rings would dwarf the value of my collection.
Sure, sure.
But with everything I have, the most complete collection. So that's my claim to fame.
All right. Well, maybe it'll be an Antiques Roadshow or something in about 50 years, right? Yeah. Okay.
If you need anything else, let me know.
No, that's it. I appreciate your time, as I said.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity.
Great. And I'm sure Sabre will appreciate it. And, hopefully in the future, somebody will make use of this in the Hall of Fame. And
maybe my kids or something.
There you go. You never know. Okay.